Hi, everybody. Hard to believe that the day is finally here. This is our first episode of a new podcast called The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and Russ Cortinel, former prolific NHLer who's been retired now for a little while. Russ was going to write a book. I said, no, we're doing a podcast. So this is it, and this is our first show. And on today's show, we're going to talk about how Russ and I met, how cruel he was to me, my argument with my neighbor who loves his leaf blower. How about Russ's drunk buddies when they decide to call into a radio show, a fire extinguisher Russ to use in a hotel room, and how to protect your superstars? All that and much more on the first very episode of The Suspendables. So I'm gonna say some shit. I'm going to talk about you, how it came together, blah, 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 blah. And here we go. Rusty, how are you doing?
Don't overthink it, you fucking idiot.
Shut up. I'm not fucking overthinking it. Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
So we'll go in 3, 2. Well, this is a huge day. This is an absolutely massive day. Okay, you are listening to the first podcast. I'm Jungle Jim Jerome, and it is with me and my friend Russ Cortinel, former National League hockey player who was got drafted in the early 80s, played for almost 20 years. Russ and I are buddies. This is how all this came together, by the way. I'm just laying out a little template. And I always thought Russ was one of the funniest guys in the world and had unbelievable stories. And like a lot of times I hear guys are going to write a book on their post-career, and I'm like, I don't want to have a book from some washed-up NHLer. But if I was ever going to buy one, Rusty, I would buy your book. Okay? I would buy your book. And I said, let's forget the book. Let's do a podcast. And here we are doing our first one.
I could probably sell 5 books and we might get 10 listeners. So let's try to get double those numbers.
The other reason is you don't know how to fucking write. So you could never do a book. Okay.
Fuck you.
Anyway, this is cool. God. This was a friend of yours, actually. We've partnered up with a company called Global Story Network, which is a buddy of yours who owns it. And they are a premium podcast service. This is me reading our first ad, Russ. This is a practice, okay, for all the sponsors we're lining up. Global Story Network is a premium podcast service delivering world-class audio entertainment to a global audience with a local twist. GSN are the powerhouse behind creating our podcast. You're going to be able to hear the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or from any podcast app or podcast catcher you have access to. So here we go, Russ. This was a buddy of yours. He thought the same as I do about you. You should do a podcast. And you said yes. But I want to bring on my retarded friend, Jim Jerome, to do it.
I said, let me think about it. But the more I thought about it, I thought, oh, my gosh, got to do this with you if I'm going to do it. Because in a million years did I think of doing a podcast. I know you have.
Right.
But, yeah. I couldn't be happier than to do it with you because I know how talented you are. And when I played with Wendell Clark in Toronto, I could go in the corners because I knew I had Clarkie on my line. And I feel the same way about anything to do with radio, with podcast with you, big fella.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm tearing up here, Russ. I got goosebumps. That's nice. You know, I'm so excited, Russ. I'm so excited.
You got a face for radio, so this is perfect.
Okay. Yeah, good. Okay. I'm so excited. I don't think I need my erectile dysfunction pill anymore. That's how fired up I am about this, okay?
Oh, my God. You know,
I don't need my Cialis, Russ. I went to the doctor. Okay, I had to tell. I said, I got a little issue here. And he said,
adult home alone. We could make a new movie. You on those pills, walking around at home alone, walking
Listen,
in
Russ,
the walls.
I got medium junk. Okay, I got medium junk, but the Cialis is frightening if anyone ever saw it. The doctor said, are you sexually active? And I said, like with somebody else? Anyway, that's how excited I am. So what's the podcast going to be about? It's you and me coming on once a week for 45 minutes or so to tell stories, to talk about you, because all the stories that you have, and I think it'll be great. I think you got a ton to offer about this, from your maniacal days as a hockey player to a father and all that stuff. And I want to tell people this, Russ, that when I met you, we've known each other 25 years, and the first time I met you, I was hammered. I forget where we were, in Vegas or something. And
we were in Phoenix.
And it was hot. And I meet you, and you're laughing because I was up doing some shtick or something. You were laughing your head off, and you were great yelling out the chirps. I came up to you, shook your hand. I was wearing thongs, okay, the open sandal deal.
And you said, I think everybody knows what thongs are.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Anyway, I said, nice to meet you, Rusty. You're funny. And you're looking me in the eye. And then slammed your heel onto my toes. And I'm like, the fuck are you doing? And you're like, hey, Jimmy, nice to meet you. Boom! On my freaking toe.
I don't remember doing that.
Oh, my God.
I'm not denying I didn't do that, but I don't remember doing that.
I said, this guy's evil, man. This guy's freaking evil, you know? I was hopping around like a pirate for the next 3 days when you did that. So anyway, Russ, listen, okay? Before we get into stuff, I got some stuff I want to ask you. Okay, you live in a nice house, okay? I live in a townhouse, Russ. I went and had a fight with my neighbor this morning, okay? The yards in our freaking townhouse, Russ, the yards in our townhouse are 20 by 20 square feet. They're a little small, backyard, fenced-in things. And my neighbor's got the leaf blower going for 2 straight hours this morning, okay? 2 straight fucking hours. So I climb out of bed, and I walk over there and say to the guy, I said, what are you trying to build a fucking pyramid here or something with these leaves? Okay? Are you trying to push these things into Saskatchewan? Are you trying to move them 2 provinces over? Okay? I said, here's a rake. This is an 8-minute rake job, but guys got the... You know they love the power tools?
Oh, yeah.
Big leaf blower. Anyway, that's who I took down this morning with that thing. So I love the tool. I don't mind the man tools, but anyway, I had a little issue with him.
I went to Notre Dame in Saskatchewan, Wilcox. A lot of hockey players went through Wilcox. Actually, John Cooper, who's coaching Tampa Bay, is a Notre Dame hound. But my buddies are in Edmonton, and they're hammered. And it's 3-4 in the morning, and they're out in the garage because that's where they can smoke and drink and be loud, and the wife's not going to get upset. And they right? go, let's call into a radio station and invent a game.
Oh, that's a good idea.
They can have their listeners call in, and it was called Guess That Power Tool. So they would start up a power tool on the air. And then the listeners would call in, and if they guessed it right, the radio station would give the person tickets to this or tickets to that or whatever. So for 2 hours, these hammered Notre Dame hounds were sitting in a garage starting up machinery, and the guy's wife came out and goes, what the fuck are you guys doing? And they said, we just created a radio show.
I love that. That's giving me some good ideas.
She thought they were lying and went back to bed. And then the next day, all her friends started telling about these guys. And she goes, that was my husband.
We're going to do that. Yeah,
but your story reminded me of my story.
Well, I'm a sucker for these power tools, okay? Or these things, you know, where you phone in or you see them on TV at night. So I bought this. The last one I bought was, it's a little jet spray. It's got a little jug. You fill it with soapy water, and there's a nozzle on the end, okay? And then the jet sprayer attaches to your air compressor, okay? So it comes out about 1,500 PSI. So I'm doing the seats in my car, you know, I'm like, this is fucking great. Oh, yeah, look at this. It's stripping paint, you know? And I thought, this might not be a bad move to clean my cats. Okay,
or your teeth.
You kidding me about my teeth? Listen, pal. Okay, because that's years of alcohol I have built up there. I've seen you drink. Okay, you got your black belt in it. You're very good. Very good.
I am a plus three.
You are a plus. I said, you know, if Russ ever gets cremated, the fire won't go out. Okay.
Hey, that's anyway. Not true. I like wine. I'm not a hard alcohol guy.
I know you're.
Well,
I know
I do have the odd martini, but
Yeah. Other than that,
I'm off
right,
beer,
Russ?
Eh? Did I tell you I'm not drinking beer?
No. Let's back up, Russ, just to clear things up.
Okay.
Jimmy, I'm not a hard alcohol drinker, but I like martini.
Once in a while.
Okay, once in a while.
You're talking about the tools and stuff. When I played in Dallas, we were on the road. We were in St. Louis.
Right.
And I'm with Shane Churla, tough guy, great human being. And we're out with Brent Gilchrist and Mike Badano. Mike Badano might be the cheapest man I ever played with. And poor Mo had that. You know, couldn't buy anybody around.
Yeah.
Disease. But we're at a casino, one of the riverboat casinos, and frickin' Mo wins all the money, and he's laughing and giggling. We go to a bar after, and he doesn't buy us any drinks, and Churls is so pissed off. I'm pissed off. We're in a cab going back to our hotel, and he goes, let's get him.
So okay.
Gilchrist and Medano go into their room. We go down the hall, and there's a fire extinguisher. And I don't know if you've ever used a fire extinguisher. I used the old water pump ones back in Medicine Hat when I was a teenager, fooling around, but not one of these ones that blow the white
powder.
Thank you.
Yeah. Listen, so, Russ, I'll tell you what. I used to, on the rare occasion where I could get a girl to come back to my house, okay, on the rare occasion, okay, I used to do that for openers. I used to go, hey, what do you think of my fire extinguisher, right? And then anyway, now I'm having trouble, Russ. I think I told you this a little while. Now I date homeless chicks because it's way easier
hey,
for them to stay overnight.
Hey, fuck nuts. I'm telling a story,
okay,
so
let's
listen.
Hear it. Go ahead. All right.
So they go in their room. We grab the fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
And Churls says, knock on the door. Well, of course, they put the chain on because they know we're going to throw water on them or do something stupid.
Right.
So they open the door with the chain on, just cracked it open a few inches. And
yeah.
Churls sticks the hose, the nozzle, into their room and turns it, goes, and we run down to our room, and we're standing outside our room waiting for them to come out. Well, they both do the tuck and roll out of the room, is on fire, and they are completely white. And the only thing you can see is their red mouths, and they're going, and the whole, it sucked all the oxygen out of their room, and and they almost freaking died. And the story goes on where they wanted us to pay for the room for 30 days while they freaking cleaned it. And oh my God, it turned into a freaking disaster. We almost killed Mo and Brent, Mo being our best player.
Don't be freaking cheap. Okay?
Yeah.
The best practical jokes, Russ, are the ones where they almost die, where you go right to the end.
To tell the story. Fuck, I almost died.
Let me guess. You almost died? You were internationally renowned. You almost died? Let me guess. Was Russ Cornell involved? Yeah, exactly. Tell me this, Russ. We're going to... this is great. This is great. I love this. The NHL season is over. You played a long time in the league. Like I was saying earlier, you got drafted in 1983. You played at a very high level. And for big teams, for Toronto, you got drafted by Toronto, you end up playing there,
yeah.
and Montreal, and you were about 6 minutes in the Rangers. I was reading that online. Like
I lasted there like a long week.
What happened? Why? Yeah. Why? You would love the Big Apple.
So, Esa Tikkanen and I got traded from Vancouver to New York.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. I mean, that summer, I was becoming a free agent for the first time, and for a lot of people now, free agency just seems so normal, but that we had a lot of difficulty back then, and finally, I was becoming a free agent for the first time. I go to New York.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a great year that year, but I started playing well. I was playing with Mess and Adam Graves, and played a little bit with Gretz, and I mean, it was, you know, oh shit, you can't play with Mess tonight, you get to play with Gretz.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. Yeah. Oh, darn.
Yeah, right.
But anyways, they wanted to sign me, and I wanted to go through free agency. And so I didn't, it ended up I didn't sign with them. And free agency for me was a total debacle, and I ended up going to LA. But I you know, in hindsight, one of those things that you look back on your career,
yeah,
and you just say, what the hell, you know, what was I thinking? And that's one of those moments where every time I go to New York now, I'm going, shit, I could have freaking played here. And you know, it was one of those. They started off offering me. They came to me before a free agency, offered me 2 years, I think, or 3 years, I can't remember,
right,
at the same money I was making. And I'm like, no, you know, I got to make more. Go to free agency. They offer me the same deal and then one less year. And then like 2 hours later, another, now I'm down to 1 year. And I just kept saying, screw it, screw you, you know, and I got pissed off, which is not a good thing. And then I ended up signing in LA and
right.
And that was a disaster. But
tell me this, Russ, when you bring this up about trades and free agency and you know, protecting guys with no trade contracts in general, in sports in general, Russ, I hear this shit all the time. You know, that the player perhaps has a choice of which team he goes to or not. You know, that he has this no trade deal, or he doesn't want to go there because it's not great for his family, or he wants to stay. How much choice, Russ, should the player have with this shit? You know, yeah, you know, you're getting paid a whack these days. And, you know, if I want to fucking trade you, excuse my language, I own this team, I want to trade you, I'm trading you. Where do these players get off and say, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. Should they have a choice in this thing or not?
Well, I think in this new era of, since I've been retired since 1999, and the new era, the guys deserve every penny they get. I think it's phenomenal. I think it's hard now that everybody seems to have that, you know, no trade clause, or I get to pick or whatever. Yeah. And I kind of agree with you that maybe that's something, I haven't even really thought of it, but maybe that's something where the NHL should say, you know what, no trade clauses. You guys are making a lot of money. Too bad.
Right.
Back when I remember when they sold Lindros for cash, and the NHL stepped in and said, and I think Gretz, there was a bit of money changed hands when Wayne got traded from Edmonton to LA.
Yep.
And the NHL said no more of that. I mean, I think Lindros was sold for players in like $25 million, or it was millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And the NHL said no more. You can't do it. Bang. And then it was gone. And I've never heard of anyone complaining about that. The GMs had to figure out, you know, players for players, assets for assets, whatever. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's something the league should look into, and the Players Association. I don't know. I think it's hard on when, I'll only play for these teams.
Yeah, shut up with that. Yeah.
Right. I know it's, and then they make it public. When it goes public, I'm like, frick, are you kidding me? Right. But, you know, there's places players don't want to play. I mean, there's some places that are just the assholes of the league. There's a couple.
Right.
And guys know it, and they're like, hey, I've earned this, and I don't ever want to play there. Mm-hmm. But maybe because they're doing so well, maybe that right should be taken away. I don't know, but I'm one of the retired players that is just applauds all these young guys making all the money. I think it's great. Good on.
Well, that's good, because most of the guys are bitter, especially the old guys who played in the 70s or 80s. They're so bitter about the money and their pensions and stuff like that. So I'm glad to hear you're supporting them with all the cash. Make all the fucking cash you can.
The older players, the older than me, that started the pension, the PA, and all that stuff, they have a right to be upset about the pension.
Right.
But no player, every era changes, and the money keeps going up, and the money keeps going up. I can't stand being in a conversation with hockey players, retired hockey players, and one guy goes, well, can you imagine if we played today, how much money we would make?
Oh, right.
You know, and it's freaking egos, and they want to brag about, you know, how great they were and how much they'd make today. And I'm like, oh my God, I just freaking hate that that conversation. It's embarrassing. We were so lucky to be able to play the game, and we played it when we played it. Just
right.
Get over it.
Anyways,
that's my opinion.
Interesting. You played in the same time Larry Robinson did. So I understand these guys who played in the 70s who were making, you know, $48,000 a year. Larry Robinson, who was one of the best defensemen in the league in his day, played for the Montreal Canadiens, you know, and an iconic hockey team in the National Hockey League. And he ended up paving highways in the summer. I get where those guys might say, this is, you know, our pension's not worth much. But fuck, these guys, Russ, now are making $5-7 million a year. I don't think we need a pension anymore. Anyway, I don't want to, I don't think you fucking guys need a, Connor McDavid, are you going to be all right? Can you get by? Can you get by on the $100 million or whatever you're making 8 years? That's in all sports. Anyway, it's something to look at. Everyone's getting paid so much. It's
when you're power washing your rusted out car tomorrow. Yes. Hopefully those fucking NDP stickers will fucking come off.
It's election time. You know, it's election time here. Here's the way I see it, Russ. I don't weigh too much in on politics, but politicians, Russ, are a lot like diapers. They both should be changed often and for the same reason, okay? Tell me this. Okay, let's I've got something to ask you. The draft, the NHL season is over. We're into playoffs. This is the beginning of April, and the draft is going to come up. I think it happens this week sometime. I'm supposed to know this stuff. Take me back to your day, Russ. I've seen kids sitting in the stands now because they televised the draft, the most boring thing in the world. But you see these young kids who are touted as a high draft pick to play in the league, and their eyes are so wide, and they're making the draw for it, and the when they do the lottery, or then the teams get their picks. And I swear to God, I heard a kid one time when someone stuffed a microphone into his face saying, "What's this draft mean to you?" And he looked at his parents and said, "More than anything in the whole wide world." I would give my parents away just to make it into the NHL. Tell us about the day you got drafted, what that felt like, or can you remember it?
God, I went in the first round, seventh pick to the Toronto Maple Leafs, which was my my favorite team growing up. My favorite player was Boris Salming, and then he became my teammate. I mean, the draft is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And it was just, my draft was held in Montreal. I had, I'd never been past Winnipeg, and I'm from Victoria, British Columbia. And so I don't know. There's so many things that, it's just, for a young kid, what doesn't matter where you're from in the world, mm-hmm. if you're a hockey player and you get to the draft and you're picked in the first round, second round, whatever round, it's just a fantastic, fantastic day. And like that kid said, it would be one of the best days in your life, you know, if not the best. But I always wanted to play in the NHL. I didn't know if I was good enough. I didn't know if I was big enough. And just as I got older, I eventually made Victoria Cougars, played in the WHL. The first time I knew I was going to get picked, possibly in the first round, I was on the bus, shocker, being on the bus in the WHL, and I was reading the hockey news, and it said Russ Courtnell, there was only 21 teams back then. Russ Courtnell, I was rated like 18th or 19th to go in the first, first round, 18th pick. Mm-hmm. And then I think by the end of the season, I was rated to go 10th, I think. And I ended up going 7th. So anyways, it was awesome. I was actually looking at a picture the other day of my mom, Harold Ballard, and myself on the day I signed in Maple Leaf Gardens. That after that draft that summer, I signed a pro contract. So I was looking at that picture of Harold. I was trying to guess how old he was when I was 18 years old.
Cool.
Listen, back in Toronto. Yeah. So it was a great day for me and my family.
So now you get into the league. There have been So many stories about rookies getting hazed when they get into the NHL, okay, about initiation. And over the years, it's been almost dangerous for some of it. But you were in, you got into the league at a time when there was no holds barred. You could do anything you want to these rookies, anything at all. You got to talk about that, some of the best rookie stories you've heard.
I ended up my first year in the NHL, I turned pro after the Olympics. So I was 18 years old, just played the last quarter of the season. Yep. And then the next year was considered my rookie season when I was 19. And Jeff Jackson, who's Connor McDavid's agent now, was drafted second round to Toronto with me. And we made the team together. And there was, I don't know, three or four rookies. And I don't know who the other two were, but Jax and I were roommates and buddies. And we're in St. Louis. And the guys come in and go, okay, whoever volunteers to go first, we'll take it easy on you. And the guy who goes last, we are absolutely going to murder. So who wants to go first? And I'm like, there's no fucking way I'm going first.
First to do what?
Jeff, to get shaved. Sorry, to get shaved, to get hazed.
Oh, you got to get your balls what, shaved. You got to get your balls
shaved. Oh, fuck yeah. They shave your heads. They shave your armpits. They shave everything. And they leave little bits of hair. You look like you came out of the movie set One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And you look like that person for the entire, well, half the season. You've got no hair left on your eyebrows or shaved. I mean, you look like somebody out of a mental hospital that's been attacked by a razor. So we're 19 and Jax goes, I'll go first.
Oh,
so he gets
good
up
man.
On the table and they shave his head. They shave his balls. They shave his armpits. They shave one eyebrow in half. He gets on the bus.
Yeah.
And he's got tears rolling down his eyes. Rolling down his cheeks. And I'm sitting beside him. And Jerry McNamara is our GM. He stands up. When he gets on the bus last, he's sitting right in front of us. He stands up. He looks at all the guys at the back of the bus and goes, there will never, ever be another Toronto Maple Leaf who ever gets treated like this ever again. There will be no more shaving.
Oh, you luck box. Oh, no.
I am inside. I am freaking doing, I've won the Stanley Cup. I'm carrying the cup around. But my buddy is, now he's not, the tears aren't coming down the cheek. They're falling onto his lap. He's fucking bawling. So for the rest of the year, he was the only guy who got shaved. Well, they shaved me. They only shaved my balls because they couldn't shave my hair because Harold and Jerry didn't want us walking around hotels in public looking like somebody had attacked us with a lawnmower.
Yeah.
So poor Jax. Jax, we'll have to get him on the show and he can talk about it because I know he'll have never, ever forgot that moment as I did.
No coach or GM wants their player walking around the hotel with a shaved eyebrow or shaved balls. You know, that could always be embarrassing. The worst I've ever heard for rookie hazing was that I went to Carleton University and barely I went there. But my brother played for the football team for the Ravens and I went to the, I was working for Molson at the time. I was like this campus rep, this great job giving beers. So I brought a bunch of beers to the locker room and they had two blocks of ice, okay? One at each end of the locker room. As soon as these rookies got in there to the locker room that day, it was sort of hazing day, okay? Everyone just take your shit off, okay? No questions asked.
Yeah.
You're gonna be naked here for the next 3 or 4 hours, okay? So that's the start. And then the opening one, Russ, is they put an olive on the top of each block of ice, okay? Okay, they put an olive there. Okay, I'm not lying. And a little wee olive on this block of ice. And each guy's at each end. And there's a glass of water. Okay, there's a glass of, a glass of water right beside each block of ice. So what you have to do, Russ, is you got to squat naked on top of the olive, okay, and grab it between your ass cheeks, Okay. You're both doing this, and then you got to race down to the other end and drop it into the glass. Okay. Into this glass of water. Okay. The guy who loses has got
to eat all the olives.
Got to drink the glass of water with the olive in and eat the olive. You know.
Oh, there we
go.
God.
That's okay. Don't worry about your leaf guys. Say, give me the ball shave, please. Give me the ball shave.
Maybe that's where they came up with dirty martini.
Now
I'll never have a dirty martini.
I guess so. Now how do you like martinis? So the draft is on. Everyone's wrapping up their years, okay, in the NHL, and they're having their post-mortems. The teams are all set for the playoffs. The 16 teams are all through. Couple things that the Oilers are not going to make the playoffs, and they, of course, have Connor McDavid, who is arguably the best player to come along in a long time. And he gets hurt. He gets hurt at the end of the year in the final game that meant nothing. They were already out of the playoffs. Not quite a dirty play. He was going wide on a guy. The guy swung.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, chopped.
He fell into the net.
Yeah, he fell into the net, and he's going to be all right. But he hurt his leg. But this guy got drilled all year, Russ. So in sports, and we'll use hockey, of course, is this guy got ran hard. He got ran hard and got hit really hard. It sort of reminded me of the old days when you guys played hockey, that it was do whatever you can, you know, to stop the guy. There was way more fighting back then. But what's your take, Russ, on this guy's a $100 million guy. There's people who talk about we have to protect our players. Some say yes, others say no. What's your take on that, Russ, about this? You know, let's use Connor McDavid as an example. Every team has a superstar guy.
Well, the best was Gino Ogic when he protected Pavel Bure in Vancouver.
Yeah.
If they would touch Pavel, he would just go right over to their bench, stand after the whistle. He'd look at their best player and say, whatever your idiot teammates do to Pavel, I'm going to do to you 10 times worse. So either tell your knucklehead teammate to stop it, or next shift I'm going to kill you. And that player would lean down the end of the bench and go, leave him alone. That guy's crazy. He means it.
Perfect.
I just can't imagine players taking advantage of other players who can't back it up. You know, I think that's the difference in today's game versus when we played. If you elbowed a guy, you were basically inviting him for a fight or slashing or whatever. You had to back it up, and now with the rule changes, some guys can get away with it. The policing thing we can probably spend 10 shows on. I think it's a good thing, having players on teams that can look after that kind of stuff. The game's really changed, I think, for the better in a lot of ways. All the talented players in the world, I think, are playing the game, and at least more so than not. And I think it's a great game, but there's always going to be players that try to slow down players like Connor. And I didn't think that penalty. I didn't think that play was a bad play, but I didn't really.
Nor did Connor. You know, he said, "No, it's fine. It's part of hockey." Connor McDavid had the best response, so he just signed this giant contract, $100 million contract. I think an 8-year deal, and they were interviewing him after, asking him about. First of all, they tried to float a rumor because the Oilers were so shitty. And then they start this rumor about maybe, you know, that he wants to get traded, you know, and they're interviewing him the night after he got hurt and bring up this trade. And he goes, I don't want to get traded. I signed an 8-year deal, you know, so stop with the trade thing. And then they asked him about the play. Was it dirty, you know? And he says, it's the greatest response I've heard because I hate lame duck responses. You know, it's all part of the game, blah, blah, blah. He was just trying, blah, 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 you know, and he says, he went wide on him, right? Because he's so freaking fast, right? He can step around guys. If you've never seen him play, get on YouTube.
Oh, he's awesome. His plays.
He says, awesome. Listen, I go wide on the guy. That's my move, you know? Daryl Cates, the owner of the Oilers, pays me $100 million to do that, you know? And if I, he says, if I stop doing that, I'm going to have to give him back the money, and I ain't doing that.
So. You know, he signed for more money, and then he did give back some of the money because he for whatever reason, so they could sign more players or something. He did give back. Yeah, they negotiated for more money than he got, and then he told Jeff Jackson, "No, that's too much money.
What?
If I take all that money, if I get all that money, we're not gonna have enough money for another. That's one extra player a year or something like that." So Connor did give back a bit of money, but he doesn't want to give any more.
No, he's had enough. Yeah. Listen, yeah. I make $13 million. You can't expect me to drop to $11 million a year. Okay, I gotta try. I gotta feed my kids and stuff.
Oh, there's the NDP coming out of you again.
Knock it off with the politics, okay? I've had enough of that. Now listen, Russ. You bring up one of my favorite fighting stories is Dennis Savard, who you would have played with, who's a Hall of Famer.
He was a wee
little guy. I got to tell you this great story about Dennis. So that was back in the day when the coach would say, someone go out there and spear the guy, you know, in the 80s. You know, go throat check him. Do something. We're going down here.
Yeah.
So Savard happened to be on the ice, and he's not the guy to do it. Right, he's not the guy to do it, but he ends up chopping the guy in the wrist or something like that, and he comes back to the bench, and the coach is pissed that he did this. You know, he said, "I never told you to do that. You want to be tough, eh, Savvy?" He says, "I want you to go out there and try and pick a fight with their goon." Okay, the guy was 6'4". Dennis Savard's about 5'9". And Dennis goes, Oh my God. Skates out there, and the coach is watching this, and all the players, and they stand face to face, and all they can see is the guy. Say, you know, nod his head and shake it back, and then shake it back and forth. No, you know, he shakes it. And then Savvy sort of shrugs his shoulders and comes back to the bench. And the coach says, "What happens?" You know, what happened? And I just said to him, "Are those new skates?" And he shook his head no. And so I came back to the bench. You got a great story. You were not a fighter. You're a lover like me. You're a lover.
No,
like
no. I had 20 in my career. I didn't know that, but I did.
Wow. I had three.
Yeah, I know.
And I cried in all three of them, and I got kicked in the face once, and that was the end of my fighting. Tell me about about one of your most memorable fights.
I know the story you want me to tell. It's
I love it.
So I'm playing in Toronto, and it's during exhibition. Yep. And when I played for the Leafs, we always played against the Oilers. So we, you know, home and away. And back then, Harold wouldn't put the names on the back of the jerseys so that the fans would buy extra programs. You know, drive those revenues. So. All of us were, you know, we just had our numbers, our jerseys with our numbers, and we were playing. And we were, training camps were always filled with a lot of fights back then. So there was young guys trying to prove themselves, tough guys trying to prove themselves. So there's tons of fights. So
yeah.
I can't remember if, I think we're beating the Oilers. And we had drafted Wendell Clark first overall that year. And he beat the shit out of Marty, beat the shit out of Weber. That wanted to fight him, and so I think he had actually dropped the gloves with who was the centerman? Oh, McTavish. So Mac T was a very popular player, and he was a tough guy, but not a fighter per se. He was a tough player, but not a fighter. And Clark, he beat the crap out of him. So what does Edmonton do? The puck drops. They're shorthanded. So it's 5-on-4 for us. We're on the power play. Stevie Thomas and I are on the ice. I know that much. And frickin' Mark Messier, Kevin Lowe, and two other guys drop their gloves and they want to have a frickin' brawl. So
there we go.
I'm the only one not fighting. I'm standing there, and Mark Messier Moose is beating Steve Thomas. So I frickin' jump in and I hit Mark a couple times, two or three times, and I actually frickin' cut him. And then Grant Fuhr jumps on me, and the fight ends. They break it all up. This is in October, maybe. Maybe it was in September back then. I can't remember.
Right.
After the game, I go in. I go, "Give me this regular season schedule." And the trainer's like, "Why do you want to see that?" And I go, "I want to see when the next time we're playing Edmonton, because I just sucker punched Mark Messier." It was in November in Edmonton.
Yeah, right.
I barely slept for like a month. So I like going to Edmonton in November, and I had met Mark a couple times off the ice, and we had had some fun partying and
right. Hang on though. You told me you wrote when you knew you were gonna. This is a doomsday for you. You punch Messi in the back of the head in a fight. You pull the jerseys over your head so you can get out of the thing, and then you went home. And you brought your kids around the calendar, and you put the date the next time you're facing Edmonton, and you wrote on the calendar to your kids, "This is the day your father dies."
No. You're freaking you. That's a drug haze. That's when you were partying too much. I didn't have kids. I was single.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have kids, but I did. I looked at the calendar and I said, "This is the day I'm gonna die." But so
now you got to face mess. Yeah, you got to face.
So now I got to face Edmonton, right? And I got to face Mark.
Right.
So who am I playing against? They match our line up against Messier's line, and we're taking a face off right in front of our bench.
Right.
First face off of the game. Against Mark, and I'm going, oh my god, he's just, as soon as the puck's gonna drop, he's gonna drop his gloves just like he did in Toronto, and he's gonna absolutely beat the shit out of me. So the referee's standing there getting ready to drop the puck. Mark looks up at me and goes, "Meet me at Barry T's after the game."
The bar.
I was like, okay, Mess. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, okay. And little did he know, I had a diaper on. I was
shit
myself.
Sure.
Oh my God. So, anyways, to this day, I don't know if Mark knew it was me, but that I hit him in that brawl or not. But he's never brought it up. We're friends, and we've played on a couple teams together, Team Canada and New York. And even though we've been in so many moments socially together, I've never ever brought it up because I don't. Well, now he knows it's me if he listens to this podcast, but he's gonna know it's me. But anyways, that's my Mark Messier fight story. And then thank God we never had another one, because Moose would have freaking killed me.
I love that story, and you got a ton more. We're gonna wrap this up. I'm trying to look at our time. I think we have a website. Okay, I think we have a website. No, it's not a website. It's a it's something at. Okay. By the way, people do not understand the effort that we've tried to put into this thing to getting it off the ground technically.
Oh my God.
I am the worst. Anyway, we're going to have tons more stories. We're going to come on once a week and do this. This is our first. We got it in the bank. Russ, we made it. I want to hear more shit though from you next show. All right?
Go put your parka back on.
And I'll leave with this. How come you never won a Stanley Cup? Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk about that next week. Okay. See you later, Rusty. All right.
See you, buddy. Okay.
Well, there you have it. First show is in the books. Thank you, Rusty. The Suspendables is underway, and we'll be back every week with another show. Thanks very much to Global Story Network, our partner in this. We can't wait to do it again. Talk to you later.